my Lexington Paris bluegrass accent on it today. She's sort of holding back. I'm always dragging some joke. We are in the study of the book of Revelation. We've gone through the first seven chapters. The warning given to the churches to pay attention, to change, to straighten up, and get their act together, which means to us because it applies to all of us. Then it talks about the plagues that are going to happen. We read from Revelation chapter 8. I lost my place. Verse 1 today, and it reads like this. When he opened the seventh seal, there was a silence in heaven for about half an hour. I thought about waiting a half an hour before I said another word, but that's, you get the point. The pungent wait and see what's going on. It gets your attention. It draws you in. Another angel. I saw the seven angels who stand before God. To him were given seven trumpets. Another angel had a golden censer that came and stood at the altar. He was given much incense to offer with the prayers of all the saints. Lord, we're happy that we can be in your house today with the freedom to read and speak, discuss, and to learn. And truthfully, it is, Father, our prayer that we become one of those saints, one who is sanctified by the blood of Christ, and we follow by our actions of worshiping and serving him, so that our sins are taken away and we've been redeemed. There are a lot of problems in this world, Father. The news just can't be believed anymore. One tragedy after another. One inhuman action after another. A lack of respect or love or kindness to each other. And Father, I pray that your power be strengthening to us. That which we can't change or make better, we will accept and know that it's making us better. For those who are ill, recovering from surgery, or facing surgery, infirmities, and these things, bless them. Let us be stronger. I ask, Father, for your blessing upon our country and its leaders, upon the choices coming up in this election, upon we as servants of yours and citizens of the U.S., and Father, help us always know that you've loved us since before we were even thought of, let alone born. Please, your speaker this day, I ask in Christ's name, amen. It's not going to be pretty in that judgment day. We've heard about the earth being destroyed, about floods, about all type of catastrophes. It's not going to be pretty. But you know, those who have been through it, or those of us who have watched it, neither is childbirth. There are pains. There's anguish. There's always opportunities, though, for us to learn and grow. Jesus will have waited long enough. When the time is finally right from God, he will come as a collector to collect his saints. First, those who have died, that are buried in the earth, burned in fires, fell into seas, whatever. But then for those who are alive, Thessalonians tells us that, and we're going to get that a little bit later. He'll call us up to be with him. But in the meantime, and the reason for his waiting is to get more and more people prepared for redemption. For it's our responsibility that every day that he tarries, we love others, talk to others, recruit others, and share good life with others. The truth of the matter is, we call this the fellowship building next door. Folks, you can go anywhere and have a dinner. You can go from McDonald's to Waffle House to Steak and Shake to a steakhouse. And you can have a dinner. And the purpose over there is not just to feed us physically, but to feed us spiritually as well. The time that we sit around talking. The time that we share the meal. The time that we eat the pies. Our times of fellowship. And that's part of the four tenets that Peter gave at the day of Pentecost. Fellowship, the apostles' prayers, apostles' teaching, and loving, These are things we're required to do. It's good for us. Most of you don't like to sit alone in a room by yourself for hours and hours and days and days and days. You like to be around people and share. And that's why we do that. But there's other opportunities to get to know each other and support one another. And I do believe that the reason Jesus is tarrying is waiting for us to fellowship with one another, to invite. Most of you here came because somebody invited you. I don't know a single one of you that were brought here the first day you were born by your parents. This is your family church like we were back home. Somebody's invited you. Somebody's brought you. You stopped by accidentally, expecting a different preacher, tall, good-looking, and thin. But you had the fellowship, so you stayed anyway. That's what it's all about, is building. Well, Jesus is allowing the earth to go through these birth pains so that we can learn and prepare and be ready and make sure that we are part of those that are in gathered, those that are called home, not part of those whose souls are lost because they didn't know and they didn't care. We go on. Another angel who stood at a golden censer. You get up too early in the morning on Christmas Eve. You see the Archduke, Bishop, somebody another of the Greek Orthodox Church, and all that fancy outfit he's got on, carrying a bowl maybe this big around, holes all through the side, decorative holes on a chain, and it's smoking. It's got incense in it, and they swing it around. That's what a censer is. And it's filled with the prayers of the saints. Not just the smelly incense, although that vanilla does smell pretty good, but not just that, but the prayers of the saints. God has gathered up all of our prayers. And they're waved in front of Him so that He will hear them and know that we care enough to go to Him for help, because our help comes from the Lord, according to David. It says the prayers of all the saints on the golden altar before the throne. The smoke of the incense together with the prayers of the saints, three times that's mentioned now, must be important if God puts it in through Christ and the Holy Spirit to John three times in one paragraph. The prayers of the saints. What does that mean? We should be praying. Well, Dwight, I've been saying, I lay me down to sleep, the Lord, it's been that long, hasn't it? I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. 2, 3 years old, 4 years old when you learn that. That's good to go with that. That's a good starter, but we need to be a little stronger and in depth. Tell God what we love about Him and how much we appreciate Him and how much our service that we can do for Him. The prayers of the saints went up before God from the angel's hand in that censer. Then the angel took the censer and filled it with the fire for the altar and hurled it to the earth. Now, the throne of God is decorated like the tabernacle was first, and of course, like the Jewish temple was later. And in front of the seat where God sat, there was a great sacrifice, the great altar where the prayers came and they stayed, and it was kept on a fire and it was burning and burning the sacrifices. And this angel filled that censer full of ashes. Most of you, from what I understand, most nearly possibly near all of us came from somewhere up north. And you know about fireplaces and campfires and bonfires and the likes. And you know that down inside all those pretty little licking yellow flames, maybe sometimes blue if it's really hot, there's a pile of ashes. And they will burn you too. Well, the angel filled those ashes in that, and he flung it to the earth. And there came peals of thunder and rumblings and flashes of lightning and earthquakes. God was punishing the earth because we here on earth were not holy and respectable and responsible to God. It's a time of waking you up. There is something for sale on the those infomercials called like a thunder wrap or a thunder blanket. If you're a puppy dog or your little kitty cat gets scared when lightning and the storms, you wrap them up. Looks like a big old huge ace bandage. To me, that would scare me to death because I wouldn't be able to breathe. But that's supposed to make a dog or a cat. I'm thinking about buying one for Olivia, the granddaughter, because she's scared of lightning. I don't know if that would work or not. Somebody probably called home health service on me. But it's scary. You've been woken out of sleep, a big old thunderbolt or maybe lightning hitting you. Well, that's what's going to happen to the earth. It stirs things up. Fires after fires after fires are started in the houses and out in the wilderness by a lightning bolt. It's so powerful. Well, that's what's going to happen to the earth again. The trumpets said, the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared to sound them. The first angel sounded his trumpet, and there came hail and fire mixed with blood. It hurled down upon the earth. Big rock chunks. Now, I'm used to sleet, or maybe a little quarter inch hail. We're talking about someone. You've seen those on TV where they advertise big as a softball, big as a golf ball, and all the damage it does. And fire coming with it, fire. We were at the Murdoch Church from 96, 7, 8. There was one of these wild forest fires that happens in this area sometimes. Stood there and watched as a pine tree on the south side exploded. And it just blew fireballs. I guess that turpentine gets hot and blew fireballs all over the ground. We were out there stomping them out, keeping them from spreading. Not a pretty thing to have fireballs coming from the sky to you. Well, that's part of what happens when the censer is thrown down. And the first angel blows a trumpet. A third of the trees were burned, and all the green grass was burned. It's a major catastrophe. Trees, if we read it right, which have chlorophyll and so does the grass, produces oxygen from carbon dioxide. Take a third of all the oxygen away from us. Have y'all ever been to the hospital? And the patient's got that little thing that goes beep, beep, a little red flash on their fingernail. And it gets so low, gets down below 80, they have to juice up the oxygen because you don't have enough to breathe. You're smothering. That's what it will feel like when you get rid of all the oxygen that's being produced. All the green grass. Not only do you lose your oxygen, now you lose the feed for the cattle and the sheep and all the animals. Catastrophe's coming down. The people need to be wakened up. The second angel sounded his trumpet. Something like a huge mountain, all ablaze, was thrown into the sea. In my mind, as feeble as it is, I see that movie Armageddon. The two of them came out within the same year, one with Bruce Willis, where a big meteorite is coming to the earth. And they say a lot of things change out west when meteorites would hit it and make deep scars. Or go into the water when it causes tidal floods. There's so much weight coming. And if it's hot, it's on fire. The damage it will cause to the environment that we're in and to the land we live in. So that's something that gets their attention. A third of the sea was turned to blood. Remember Moses and the 10 plagues in Egypt? When Moses, well, through God really, turned the Nile River into blood? I don't even like my steaks rare. How do you want your steak? I want it medium well. A little bit of pink, a little bit of pink. No blood coming out of it. Some of y'all like that carnivorous stuff. I don't want it to move when I bite it. At all. Well, blood's not what we want. Blood is sad what's going to happen. You can't drink it. I have a hard enough time getting a peach milkshake from Chick-fil-A down. So thick. A third of the living creatures of the sea died. Well, of course, they had no oxygen. A third of the ships were destroyed. There goes your economy. See what's working in the world? Destruction of what we know is taking place. A third angel sounded his trumpet, and a great star, blazing like a torch, fell from the sky. The word star there is actually translated from the Hebrew, heavenly body. What would happen if a big chunk of the moon broke off and hit our land or our mountains or our seas? I would think it would cause a little bit of destruction. No, I think it would cause a whole lot of destruction. A third of the trees, a third of the rivers, the springs of water. And the name of that star was called Wormwood, death and destruction. A third of the waters turned bitter. Many people died from the waters that become bitter. We were working one day, and my grandfather knew some people. We went by their house. We were thirsty. We were moving a house. My papa went in. He said, "We're thirsty. Can we have some water?" And he gave us a glass jug. And I opened the top up, and I about passed out. I had never seen sulfur water before. And if you've never drank sulfur water, where you put it underneath your nose and the sulfur invades the whole top of your head, and if you don't die, which you think you're going to, if you swallow, it doesn't taste any better. Some of y'all have wells in this area that has sulfur water, and you have to use that little big barrel, look like a trash can with bubbles, and the sulfur comes up. Don't lift the lid off one of those and see if there's any water in it. It will take your breath away in water. It's bitter, and it kills you when you drink it. Fourth angel sounded a trumpet, and a third of the sun was struck. A third of the moon, a third of the stars. So that a third of them had turned dark. A third of the day was without light. Also a third of the night. Begin to see there's a lot of power going on there. A lot of destruction to the earth. We will learn later on in this book that John says, a new heaven and a new earth. For the old ones had passed away. The land that we're used to, we thought would live forever, will be gone, and God will create a new one for us. But the old one has to be destroyed. As I watched, I heard an eagle that was flying in midair call out with a loud voice, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, because the trumpet blast is about to be sounded by the three other angels." I guess people weren't getting the message. And I know that God was not through with him yet. So you wonder, how bad does it get? It's going to get worse. Before the Pilgrims were other settlers. They were not the first of all the settlers in America. All of them down the East Coast, even as far north as Canada, there were settlers from the old country, England, Scotland, Ireland, the Netherlands, those type of places. Life is tough. If you've ever gone camping, I mean, I'm not talking about pulling one of those $250,000 big luxury, you know, hotel on wheels. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a tent, you know, that you got to lay flat, or the hurt your back when you're laying on an anthill or something like that. Not even a pull behind pop up. I'm talking about roughing it camping. You got to, if you want to eat, you got to go out and kill something. I love this show called Mountain Men. You don't kill something, you don't eat type of stuff. And there's no Publix up there. They had a tough time. But they had in their mind they were better off than they were in England or Ireland or Scotland or the Netherlands, Germany, France, some even Spain that went farther south. Well, they came here. They didn't go any farther south. They were here. And they made it work. And for a long time, things were great. They helped one another. They served one another. Things began to grow. Then the world changed. England stayed in a constant state of war with France. And you were on England's side, you were against them. You were on France's side, you were against them. And that would have been all right if they had kept it to themselves. You know, you go to less than 100 miles between them in the English Channel, and you whip on each other for a while, then you go back, lick your wounds, and go back and do it again. But after a while, it began to expand. And with that, it became expensive to pay a soldier continually, to pay a sailor continually, to provide their food, to provide their weapons, to supply their ships and all, was expensive. Well, we've got those colonists over there, and they're part of us, and we protect them. I'm thinking how they protect them. They're a long way at home, but we protect them. And they like tea like we like tea. They dress funny like we dress funny. They need help. So several different ways they put taxes on us. The Stamp Act, the Tea Act, all over and over and over. To share the burden. The problem is, when you give some independent people anyway, because they came over here, so you knew they had to be independent. When you give some independent people anyway, a little bit of the feeling of independence, they say, hey, we like this. Don't like to be called into the boss's office every week and justify my existence. Don't like the boss taking a good percentage of my work effort so they can be supported over on the other side of the ocean. They begin to say, we don't like this at all. The move for independence, greatly attributed to Samuel Adams, not John, but Samuel Adams, centered around the Boston area, began to grow and ferment and fester. Well, then you say they got that much extra time, they got that much extra money. Let's just tax them some more and more. Let's restrict what they can do. Let's tell them what they can grow or what they can eat. And by golly, you can say a lot of wrong things or things that are wrong about the United States. But giving up is not one of them. And they begin to resist. It tried to be peaceful at first. Now, this did not all happen, contrary to what I believe growing up. This did not all happen on July the 4th, 1776. This has been going on for decades. Armed resistance for decades. We petitioned through the leadership of Benjamin Franklin and several other emissaries. Franklin was over there for 10 years trying to prevent the war and the separation from happening. He was a very loyal British soldier, servant at first. But it began to be worse and worse and worse. It's like your next door neighbor. About once a month, once every 6 months, he'd move the fence over closer to your house and claim part of your land. Some of you sound like you've had that done before. Well, it goes on to point that the British began to resist us. We were outgunned and outmanned. But the one thing the Americans had was heart. The desire to be free. And through years and years of preparation, the undermanned group began to say, we're stronger. We push for freedom. First Continental Congress took place, and they said, we need to set path for freedom. 1774, the Second Continental Congress took place. And they worked on how to establish the freedom. Talked about army. Now, our guys have been fighting in British uniforms with the British, alongside the British, through the French and Indian Wars. Matter of fact, when they first called for the First Continental Congress, Georgia couldn't even show up. They had everybody they had down fighting the Indians. The Native Americans in Georgia couldn't even send anybody to get away with it. It was a tough life. A decision had to be made. Benjamin Franklin's own son was the governor, the British governor, the Tory governor of his state. After the war was over, they never spoke to each other again. He moved over to England. But decisions were made what we want to do. I have been to Philadelphia with Vicky, you, and Harold. Went up. We flew into Philadelphia one day on a trip, cold and nasty. But in July, Philadelphia was neither cold. Nasty probably still was. They met in a room smaller than we're in here today. They kept the shades shut, the windows down, because nobody was supposed to see what was going on. And there they debated very passionately about what to do, what must take place. All the time realizing there would be a cost to pay. Early part of the meeting, the representative from Virginia named Lee, an ancestor of Robert E., voted to secede from England. Well, they didn't do it. They appointed a committee of five to look into it, who came back in late June to present a document mostly written by Thomas Jefferson that starts out in the course of human events. And he talks about we the people. He talks about freedom. And it was difficult. I grew up in Lexington, Kentucky. A great place to be. And to move away the first time, and the second time, and the fourth time, and the fifth time isn't easy. And any of you always had a love where you grew up, and you move away and things change. You leave your job, you leave your friends. That isn't easy. And they knew that if they declared this Declaration of Independence, if they declared to be free from England, it was not going to be easy. The sources and guidance they got from England at first was good. It was actually July the 2nd, 1776. We know this because John Adams, the second president, wrote back to his wife Abigail, who's a powerful, she's got a powerful biography. These people all have a powerful biography. Wrote that, I can imagine in the future, the 2nd of July will be greatly celebrated with cannon fire, with fireworks, with games, with parades, with music, and cheering. But only two signed it that day, that's all they could get together. And that day when John Hancock signed it. It was a little bitty chicken scratch. They came back 2 days later when everybody could be found and signed it. He signed it with a large handwriting. He said, John Bull, that's what they called George III, President, King George III. Let John Bull read it now. And even though I know that he read my name, and he'll double the death tax, the reward on my head, I want him to know how I believe. It took days. It took weeks to get everybody back to sign it. The truth is, that didn't start the war. We had been under war against England for months and months and months. Skirmishes in some place, guerrilla raids in other places. Lexington Concord took place. A lot of things went on. And the strangest thing, when you start to watch the fighting, most of it took place, and I know some of you don't know where Boston is. It took place up in that area, all the things from Boston Commons and all. One-third of the people were colonists who wanted separation. One-third of the people were Tories, and for sure did not. The other third didn't seem to care at all. They just wanted to be left alone. So 1 million people, that's all it was for, freedom. But they were strong, and they were persistent. And dare I say, they were blessed by God. 56 people signed the Declaration of Independence over the period of time. We know about the ones we hear a lot about. Five signers of those 56 were captured by the British as traitors and tortured to death. 12 had had their homes ransacked, burned. 2 lost sons in the Revolutionary War. Another had 2 sons captured. 9 of the 56 fought in the actual battles and died from wounds or hardships of the Revolutionary War. They signed, they pledged their fortunes and their sacred honor, which to them was a lot more important than the money they would lose. 24 were lawyers and jurists, the educated. 11 were merchants, the well-to-do. Some were large plantation owners, men of means, educated. They signed the Declaration of Independence knowing that they would probably lose everything they had, including their own lives, if they were captured. Carter Braxton of Virginia was a wealthy planter and a trader. His ships were captured at sea by the huge British armada. He died in poverty after selling everything he had on the United States land and then passed away as a pauper. Thomas McKean, so hounded by the British that he was forced to live and move constantly. He served in Congress without pay. His family was kept in hiding because they knew the British captured him, they would be penalized if not killed. His possessions were taken, and poverty was his reward for signing the Declaration of Independence. Vandals or looters captured the property of Dilliard, Hall, Clymer, Walton, Gwinnett, Hayward, Rutledge, and Middleton. Just robbed and stole everything they could get as they went through. The Battle of Yorktown, Thomas Nelson Jr. was lined up with Washington's troops on one side of the river, and there was his home and all his great holdings there. He told Washington to fire the cannons at his home because the British were using him for headquarters. He was right. They did. They destroyed everything. He died in poverty, bankrupt. Francis Lewis had his home and all properties destroyed. They only jailed his wife, and they treated her so badly, she died within a few months. John Hart was driven from his wife, his dying wife's bedside. He and his 13 children fled and lived in the bushes and the wilds, never to be totally reunited again. Norris and Livingston, their wives died as well in captivity. They were not wild-eyed men. They were not ruffians. They were peaceful men who wanted the right thing to be done. They had security, but they valued liberty more. Standing tall and straight, unwavering, they pledged for the support of this declaration, a firm reliance and resolve with the protection of divine oversight. We mutually pledged to each other our lives, our fortune,
and our sacred honor.
Yeah, we'll laugh tomorrow, and we'll sing tomorrow, and we'll talk about things like this. Then we'll eat, and we'll hooly hoop, and we'll hug each other and say good night and happy anniversary of the 4th of July. Do not ever go to bed. Do not ever get up in the morning without thanking God for the country that we were blessedly born into and that we should be serving. And Dwight, how did you tie that into the Bible? Well, it's this way. Jesus pledged to us his possessions, his life, and his sacred honor. Not only willing, but did die so that we may live forever and ever with our Father. That these breaking of the seals, that these emptying of the bowls of wrath, that these seven trumpets that are going to be played, will not affect us, will not harm us, will not permanently damage us or kill us, because we are the family of God. God bless America on this day. Our hymn of invitation, Irina? Number 6, 692. Stand with us as we sing our decision hymn, 692. Thank you.